Well, 2 years ago we did it, and people thought we were a little cray-cray. I should stop using hip words.
No, you should, folks.
Okay. So, we thought we'd do it again, because that's how we roll here on the Drew Marshall Show. Soul Survivor. Religious tribes compete for the soul of one person. And we're being cheeky about the compete. I guess, really, when you think about it, that's what it feels like out there. But we're simply giving one person the opportunity to speak with a variety of religious leaders, tribal leaders, if you may. Tribal leaders explain to our soul survivor what it is that their tribe actually believes, and the tribal leaders will not have immunity, as we found out last week. Our soul survivor will be able to challenge, critique, or question any aspect of all tribal codes, and at the end of the contest, our soul survivor will then decide which tribe presented the most compelling case for faith, and then reveal to us if they have any interest in maybe joining that tribe. So, today on Soul Survivor, our tribal leader representing tribe Hindu is Arun Gandhi, and he is the grandson of the Gandhi. The Gandhi.
Mahatma.
Brat, brat.
Mohandas K.
Something like that, yeah. Ryan is our soul survivor, and the quick summation of Ryan's story, and by the way, if you'd like to read all of Ryan's story, that's posted us. Go to soulsurvivor.ca. Ryan grew up with some religion in his life, and then became an agnostic, and then became an atheist, and then became an anti-theist, and
what's an anti-theist?
Really ticked off with the fact that people think there is a God.
Oh, how's okay. That? All right.
Does that work?
Riff raff everywhere. But no, it's actually true. And like I told you before, we came around to that. And and you know, we're trying.
So was Dawkins an anti-theist?
Yes.
Atheist.
Hitchens, anti-theist.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're not just atheists.
No.
They're anti-theists.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
You okay? You all right there? Today you get the opportunity to speak with the grandson of Gandhi, which... I don't know whether you realize this, but he was born in 1934.
Wow.
1934.
How
you know,
because cool
we think of Gandhi's grandson being, I don't know, just out of high school or
yes.
something.
It's just
well,
a young
Gandhi
punk.
Died in 48? 48,
49.
Do you know what day he died?
Well,
January 30th.
What am I, Wikipedia?
How do you know? Today?
Yeah.
Oh, great. So you're calling this guy?
On the
anniversary.
That better be accurate, right? Yeah, right, research assistant over there in the corner? I'm spouting this stuff like I know what I'm doing. Oh, man, anyway. So, born in 1934 in Durban, South Africa, Arun Gandhi is the fifth grandson of India's legendary leader, Mohandas K. Mahatma Gandhi. That's what they called him. Growing up under the discriminatory apartheid laws of South Africa, he was beaten by white South Africans for being too black and black South Africans for being too white. So Arun sought eye for an eye justice. However, he learned from his parents and grandparents that justice does not mean revenge. It means transforming the opponent through love and suffering. Grandfather, as he would be called, Gandhi, grandfather taught Arun to understand nonviolence through understanding violence. And for years, he has participated in the Renaissance Weekend deliberations with President Clinton and other well-respected Rhodes Scholars. Other engagements have included speaking at the United Nations, Chicago Children's Museum, Women's Justice Center in Ann Arbor. The Women's Justice Center sounds like a superhero hideout. Justice League of America.
Once your powers activate.
Young President's Organization in Mexico, Trade Union Leaders Meeting in Milan, Italy, the Peace and Justice Center in St. Louis, Missouri. I mean, he's just been all over the place. Mr. Gandhi, your last name must provoke a lot of reaction, even at the supermarket. Or when you get pulled over by the police for speeding. Has that ever happened?
Not for speeding, but I travel a lot, so the TSA people and the police, you know, checking and all that. I've had all kinds of experiences. Some people have recognized and have been very happy. I had a very classic experience in Salt Lake City when I went to check in there, and the lady who took my... details to give me the boarding pass. She said, "You have a very famous name." And I said, "Yes, I do." And he was my grandfather. And she was so shocked. She said, "I can't believe it." I said, "Yes, it's true." So she said, "Well, can I give you a hug?" I said, "Sure." And she came out and gave me a hug. And then she tells her colleague on the counter there, "Can you believe I just gave a hug to Gandhi's grandson?" And the lady turns around and says, am I supposed to know who Gandhi is?
Oh, no. That's humbling right
yes.
there. Oh, that's, I don't know. How do you not know the name Gandhi today?
Wow. I think that's more awareness of where you are.
Yeah, that's right. That's
Yay,
right.
Salt Lake City.
Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, I would like to introduce you to Ryan, who is our sole survivor. And Ryan, Mr. Gandhi.
Hi. I have to tell you what a pleasure and honor this is just to be able to speak to you.
But why? Is it just because of the reputation of his grandfather?
No,
we don't know Arun Gandhi. You, sir, with all due respect, you could be a big jerk.
No, I read about.
Yeah, right. Could be.
No, he because of the family lineage. I wouldn't.
You'd hope there wouldn't be any grandkids who were jerks.
No, I wouldn't dismiss the fact that, you know, he doesn't have certain privileges over others, but he signed the. What year was that, 1980, that you signed the 18 Arts and Sciences and Vedas, and they studied the math and sciences? That was League of Nations stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was UN stuff. Like, that was a big deal. Like, you were leaning towards, I wouldn't say atheist, but... and
more like universalist.
Universalist. Okay, that's the big question. I had so many questions to ask you at first, but I just want to ask, what is a universalist?
One who believes in all the religions, respects all the religions, and treats everyone equal as one's own.
So are you a universalist, or are you a Hindu, and can you be both?
I am both, because in Hinduism, you know, there is no baptism, there is no, what do you call it? You don't have to be allied to any church or temple or anything. You're just born a Hindu, you're born into a Hindu family, and you're a Hindu.
Well, it's the largest democracy on earth, so we have to give it some respect. I mean, and third largest religion, and the only one that really... significantly doesn't practice.
I have a little problem because people do call it a religion, and yet
it's a philosophy.
Like the other organized religions, you know, there is nothing organized about it. It's just some people call it a way of life, and I have a problem with that also because I don't know what way of life.
India is so big that there's a billion people there,
yeah.
But it's fantastic. And you know, the quotation that I remember, I don't know if it was from your father or your grandfather, was, truth is one, paths are many.
Yeah, my grandfather.
Well, you couldn't put that any better.
The question I've been really wanted to ask you is, you know, we talk about Gandhi's quotes, because that's how Gandhi is known these days. Would you not agree, Tim?
Mostly
by his
quotes. Oh, yeah, you know, be the
change
you want to see, sure. Probably his best known one.
Sure. But the one that I often use, because I've been involved in the Christian scene for so many years, Mr. Gandhi, is this one. I would have become a Christian had it not been for the Christians. Is that accurate?
Not quite. I mean, what happened was he was asked by a Christian priest because they were having a discussion, and my grandfather said how impressed he was by the Sermon on the Mount. And this priest said, well, if you're so impressed by the Sermon on the Mount, why don't you become a Christian? And he said, well, when the day you can convince me that all Christians live according to the Sermon on the Mount, I'll be the first one to become a Christian.
Well, that's a little different, but
in your face.
I still like it. I still like it. All right, well, let's get right into Hinduism here, because last week it was tribe Mormonism that was represented, and that had an interesting ending. If you want to listen to that, you go to soulsurvivor.ca.
It was a quick ending.
It was a quick ending. And this week it's tribe Hinduism, and then in a couple of weeks we're going to have Billy Graham's daughter on the show, Anne Graham Lotz, and she will represent tribe Christianity. Of course, representing tribe Hinduism today is Arun Gandhi. And Mr. Gandhi... let me start with one question, and then I'll get Ryan to kind of kick it into gear here a little bit more. But is it true that Hindus believe the one supreme God manifests in various forms.
Yeah, well, to put it simply, Hindus believe that nobody has seen the image of God, so nobody knows what God looks like, whether it's a male or a female, or, you know, what kind of appearance it has. Mm. And so they feel that since nobody knows it, how can anyone criticize somebody's belief? So if I believe that God exists in this computer monitor in front of me, well, that's my right. And so they accept that. And if somebody else believes that God exists in a tree, in the form of a tree, they'll accept that also. And that is how in Hinduism there are so many different images of God. Mm-hmm. God is only one, but there are a million images of God.
Sure, right. So, but Hindus have often venerated a sort of a triad of deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's the creator, the destroyer, and the preserver.
Mr. Gandhi, I have to ask, I mean, there's a billion Hindus on this earth. It's the third largest religion in the world. And it's fascinating to me that the West doesn't recognize, well, I do because I happen to own a house in Brampton for a few years and my children still live there. But without a racist tone, you know, white folks there are in the minority. And we don't get a chance to understand exactly what your religion teaches. And, you know, we have Sikhs and Muslims and all the rest in that area. But I have to say I am totally impressed with the Muslim religion.
The Muslim religion or the Hindu religion?
Hindu religion, my bad. Sorry.
You got to get that one straight.
Yeah, that was a little much. Mr. Gandhi, if you could... just describe, in essence, how did you become the world's third largest religion? There must be something to it, and I know it's...
Is it just procreation?
No, it's the river, and it's the flow, and it's the common sense of the religion, and it's the openness to everything, but...
Well, I think that's what it is. It's the openness, because, you know, all the other religions, Sikhism, Jainism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, they are all organized religions. They have a set of principles and they have certain beliefs, and they are, in that sense, organized. So you can pick up a couple of books about Sikhism or Jainism and you can understand what they stand for and what the religion is. And Hinduism is none of that. It's not organized, and it has as many interpretations as there are people in Hinduism. So everyone interprets it in a different way, and that's why I have a problem describing it as a religion.
Would you describe it more as a philosophy then? Like, kind of like Buddhism?
I think it's a philosophy. It's not a religion. It's a philosophy.
Would the Hindu leaders, the spiritual leaders within Hinduism, would they be bugged at you for saying that?
Yeah, they would be, because, you know, we have to understand priests in all religions, they are out to control and power and money, and all of these things play a very important role apart from religion. Hmm. And so when somebody threatens that or believe, that's one of the reasons why my grandfather was assassinated and you know, not very well respected by some of the religious people.
He was respected by most of the world, though, sir. And I have to ask you this quotation from your grandfather, and I don't want to dwell on your grandfather because you've done so many great things yourself, but the one thing I'm looking at here is he said, "Nonviolence is the greatest force at the disposal of mankind. It is mightier than the mightiest weapon of destruction devised by the ingenuity of man." And following that, you had Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez, and even Nelson Mandela in South Africa. You have, you know, a great family tree to live up to, and I have looked you up and read what you did, and when you signed that order with the Dutch back, 14 years ago, did he have a great influence on you? Was this...
He had an influence on many people, and certainly on me, because I lived with him for 2 years between the age of 12 and 14. And many things that he taught me at that age, although I was a young boy, but the way he taught me and explained things to me, when I grew up and began to reflect on it, I realized how important they were and how life-changing those messages were. And so in that way, he has been able to influence a lot of people.
Well, let's go back to the religion here again, and let's talk about your holy book. This is the hardest holy book to pronounce. I'm just telling you right now, this has always been a stumbler for me. Bhagavad Gita is the most loved of all the Hindu scriptures. Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
And do you see it personally? Like, some people say that one of the most confusing books in the world, religious books in the world, has been the Book of Mormon. And some people would say, well, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is still really hard for me to assimilate, to implement in my life. How do you find it as a scripture? And is it something you read every day? What are the rules? Do you have to read it every day?
No, we don't have to read it every day. And that's why I said there are no rules, because there is no organization. There's nobody who's going to hold me accountable whether I read the Gita or not read the Gita. Hmm. So, you know, I do read it sometimes when I feel like it. But, the Gita, again, like all scriptures, are very ambiguous. They don't say it out in clear terms. It's kind of, it lends itself to interpretation. And so everybody can interpret it in the way they want to. Now, the Mahabharata and the Gita are interlinked. Mahabharata is the story of the war that took place between the evil and the good. Now, the person who wrote the Mahabharata has taken literary license and has written about the war in terms of a real war, where the forces of good and the forces of evil face up each other in a battlefield, and they fight it out there. And the good wins.
That is
the popular interpretation of the Mahabharata. But grandfather said the Mahabharata war that was shown is depicted is not an actual war. It is the war that goes on within the minds of each individual between what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad. Each one of us, every day, are faced with that war when we have to make a decision about what is right or wrong. And it's that kind of poetic description of that battle and not an actual war. Today, a lot of Hindus, they go literally by the Mahabharata and say that God himself was for war. And therefore, they justify wars against what human beings call evil people.
I certainly couldn't agree with you more as far as the New Age goes. I mean, you know, every child on a smartphone can give you an explanation of religion, but you're one of the premier paramount spokesmen of the Hindu religion.
I speak about it, and I...
You speak about it with great humility, sir. It's very welcoming to most of the West.
Thank you, but most of the Hindu religious believers today will not consider me to be a representative of Hinduism.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. You would...
The present government of India, very right-wing Hindu religious people, they would consider me to be a...
Well, isn't that when politics crashes? Really?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just... I want to skim over some points here about Hinduism. And you... I'll stop at the end, and then I want you to tell me if there was one of them that is maybe a little inaccurate, okay? So for our listeners who are trying to figure out what Hinduism is all about, for our soul survivor who is here listening to you speak to us about Hinduism, I want to just skim through a few points. Are you ready, Mr. Gandhi?
Yes.
So Orthodox Hindus believe God created the caste system. Hindus believe that gods came to earth to help humanity. Krishna is the favorite avatar in the Hindu religion. Salvation is both by the grace of the gods and the work of the human beings. Most Hindus believe that the stories of their deities are historically true. Proper living involves faith in God, good works, and proper worship. Hinduism places great stress on having a guru to guide one's spiritual path. Hinduism puts much emphasis on mystical experience. Hindus believe the world was created 311,040 billion years ago, just to narrow it down. All life is sacred, and non-injury is to be adopted toward all living things. And finally, Hinduism places focus on annual pilgrimages to holy sites throughout India. Would any of those be inaccurate, according to you, Mr. Gandhi?
No, they're very accurate according to the general perception of Hinduism and belief in Hinduism. But like I said, there are different interpretations of Hinduism. And the one that I like most and I follow most is the one that my grandfather interpreted. And basically, what all the things that he said, all the things that you said were accurate, except for the fact that there's no historic record of, gods having come on earth and did great things and so on. What the fact is that people themselves have risen up to the occasion at certain times, did great things, and we, instead of following them and doing the things that they expected us to do, we put them on a pedestal and we worship them. So very soon, I wouldn't be surprised if my grandfather is put on a pedestal and they have temples built for him and consider him to be a reincarnation of Krishna.
In truth, I can't believe it's taken this long.
You think it should have been probably... You're surprised it hasn't happened already,
yes,
right? Yeah.
For certain.
Yeah. So, this is, what we human beings have been doing in all religions. Even in Christianity, Jesus has been put on a pedestal and Son of God, and so he was special and special powers, and therefore, we human beings can't match him.
Mr. Gandhi, I have to get this out because I still have a whole slew of questions to ask you, but I have more of a personal question to ask you. Right now, I'm curious. When I was growing up, my father was the best at what he did. I would inquire, is there something I can do to get to that stage in the game? And I guess just to cut to the chase, as accomplished as you are as a scholar, I just want to know, do you think there's anything that makes you live in the shadow of your grandfather still after all you've done?
Well, I am proud of the fact that I have this legacy, and if that means that I'm living in his shadow, that's perfectly
fine. No, it doesn't. That's exactly the answer, yeah. I was hoping for. I just didn't want to insult you when I asked.
A lot of people ask me, and I did feel when I was growing up, I felt the burden of this legacy, and I told my mother, I said, I don't know how I'm going to go through life with this burden. And she told me, she said, if you consider this legacy to be a burden, it's just going to get heavier and heavier as you get older. But if you consider this legacy to be a light that is illuminating the path ahead for you, it'll be easier for you to deal with. So I have looked at this legacy ever since then as a light that is showing me the way.
Well, I have to... Okay, if I get the opportunity, Drew, is it okay? Switch gears for a sec. I just want to ask a couple of questions about Hinduism that I happened to do a little research on because I knew nothing about it. I apologize, sir.
Well, that's why you're here doing what you're doing. So go for it. Ask a question.
All right. The River Indus and the River Saraswati, a Harappan civilization. And I'm looking at this diamond-shaped thing where the Himalayan rivers flow to the Arabian Sea on the west, the Sri Lankan island on the south, and the Bay of Bengal on the east. If you could just explain the significance of those rivers to me, and I know your grandfather was obviously cremated and put into the Ganges, where that's where he wanted to be, but what's the religious significance of that?
Well, you know, like I said, in religion, people put significance on all kinds of things. In actual fact, there is nothing religious about those rivers except for the fact that water is precious for life. And in those days, much of India, in the old days, it is said that much of India didn't have an adequate supply of water. And then they discovered these rivers, and the rivers provided the water, so water became sacred, and therefore these spatial rivers became sacred, especially the Ganges, which flows from the Himalayas up in the mountains and comes down into the plains. So, you know, everything that flows from top, they believe it's coming from heaven. And so they give the rivers all kinds of religious significance there, but the plain fact is that the only significance of these rivers is that they are perennial rivers. They provide water for the inhabitants on both sides, and for the land becomes fertile because of the rivers, and agriculture is possible.
The other question I had was, I was trying to do research, but it really didn't satisfy me. And I, listening to your eloquence and your explanation of said religion, I still haven't swayed. So, Atman, the divine soul.
Atma, yeah.
So the question is?
I just wanted more of a definition. I mean, I know it means the divine soul, but what does that entail as far as embracing Hinduism?
Well, Atma is the soul. I mean, we all believe that every living creature has a soul, and the soul is supposed to be life force, giving each person life. Whether there is any, physical form of soul in the body or not, it's a matter of conjecture still. Nobody really knows. And I believe many years ago, some scientists in the West tried to do this research, and they put a dying man in a glass cage to see whether something comes out of the body and the soul that flies away. And there was nothing of the sort. So there are all these different interpretations of the soul. My interpretation of the soul is that sunlight, if we don't have sunlight, no life can exist on the earth. Not human life, not animal life, nor vegetables. Nothing would live without sunlight. So sunlight, the ray of light, is the soul that we talk about. When we die, that candle sniffs out and the light goes out and we are dead. So that is my interpretation of the soul.
Sure, sure.
People have all different interpretations.
The realization that the soul, Atman, is divine, Brahman, is the key to salvation. And from what I've read, some Hindus believe that individuality will be merged with divinity, while other Hindus believe that individuals will be in union with God but retain identity. And I guess we're talking about after death. So let me ask you directly, Mr. Gandhi, what do you think will happen to you after you die?
I don't know. Nobody really knows what happens to anybody.
No, but according to your to your interpretation of your Hindu belief, what do you think will happen?
I think my the light will go out in my body, and this body will perish, and you know, life and birth is a cycle that takes place all the time. So there'll be another life that is born. Now I don't know whether that'll be my soul going into that person. I don't believe that. I don't think it is that kind of transaction.
Isn't one of the core beliefs of Hinduism, though,
reincarnation?
Reincarnation, yeah.
Yeah, that's a popular belief, but I don't see any evidence.
So if you dig up something in your driveway, like a plant that your wife says, you know, it's dead, it looks like crap, you have to take that out at the end of the driveway. And that morning, you know, your buddy phoned you and said, I happen to be going fishing today. I really would like to pick you up. I think we'd have a fun day together. We'll just stop and pick up some bait. Would you not say, well, instead of spending $10 on worms, I'll tell you what, I have some worms from this plant I picked up at the end of the road? Doesn't that go against the exact moral teachings of Hinduism? Or
so did I just hear you say, don't kill worms if you're a Hindu?
Well,
no, there is. That's why I said earlier there are so many different interpretations of Hinduism. Now, it's wrong to believe that all Hindus are vegetarian. We are not vegetarian. There are many Hindus who are beef eaters and meat eaters, and they eat everything, and there are Hindus who are strictly vegetarian. So there is, you know, all of these things within Hinduism. And so some people the Jains may consider killing plants and worms as a sin. But there are many Hindus who kill animals for food.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, let me just remind our listeners, we're on the phone with Arun Gandhi, who is, of course, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. And one of Gandhi's biggest fans is actually here in the studio with us. My good friend Tim the Tool, who runs the board here and has been with our show for far too long, way too many years.
Yes.
Tim, I would like to introduce you to Arun Gandhi. And I know this is actually a personal thrill for
you. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, the challenge, of course, is, you know, separating you from your grandfather. And I loved what you said earlier about how you eventually chose through your mother's guidance. You know, it could be a burden, it could be a blessing, and I love that you chose to do it that way. One question I have with regards to Hinduism, obviously we have the Trinity, the Triumvirate, what you want to call about those three main gods. One of the other things that's quite, I guess, recognized within Hinduism is the pantheon of different gods, you know, Lakshmi, Hanuman, Ganesha, and so on and so forth. What did those represent? Are those, like you mentioned earlier, like this war between, you know, good and evil? You know, was it real or is it just a representation of the mind? What do the gods, the different gods, represent within Hinduism?
Well, there are these different beliefs, you know. We have a god for wisdom, we have a god for creation, you know, there's a god for everything in Hindu life. It's just a belief. It doesn't mean that there is a god there, but it just means that, you know, people believe that god of knowledge gives you knowledge, a god of health gives you health. So it's one of those beliefs that exist in all religions without any concrete examples or explanations.
Yeah, it'd be like the saint system in Catholicism. You know, there's a saint for travel, there's a saint for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, it's just a belief that, you know, we believe that God protects us in all of these different fields.
All right.
What you said about the god of knowledge, isn't it Swasari, the goddess of knowledge? Because I've been praying. Well, Ganesh is the remover of all obstacles, as far as I know. I was praying to be smart, and I was praying to this woman.
You're praying to the wrong god.
I was praying to the wrong god. That's my problem.
Don't.
That's why I can't spell.
No, I think Shiva might have had a good time with you over the years. Mr. Gandhi, in the yoga world, the yoga world, I've just kind of been introduced to myself. There's actually quite a funny video out of this guy who comes in dressed up like your grandfather, Gandhi, to take a yoga class, and they treat him like garbage because, first of all, he's not dressed right. He just has a robe on. He doesn't have Lululemons on. He doesn't have yoga pants on. He's got no water bottle. He says, well, this is actually how you do the move. And they start chastising him because he doesn't really know what he's doing. So I often wonder about the new version of Hinduism, which is combined with Western materialistic navel gazers. I'll use that word. It must frustrate you of your generation, but also the Puritans, those within the Hindu faith. They must look at the yoga community and go, come on, stop trying to hijack our belief. And if you are going to hijack our belief, then do it right.
Yeah, I guess to some extent, yes. But, you know, I look at yoga mostly as a physical exercise form. And if people want to do it in a different way, that's okay with me. I don't see anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing purely religious about yoga. So
That's very well said. From the instructor that I've kind of leaned into this community, and that's what the people in the community have told me as well. Okay, because of time, and it's ludicrous to think that we can summarize a world religion in 25 minutes.
I still have a couple more questions.
Well, we've run out of time. Sorry about that. So, I just want to respect your time as well, Mr. Gandhi. But first of all, we would love to. We got to figure out a way to get somebody to bring you up as a speaker to Toronto, because you've not been to Toronto yet?
I've been to Toronto several times, but not as a speaker.
All right. Well, we need to, for everyone listening, Arun Gandhi is the one you've just been listening to. He would be a dynamic speaker for you to bring in to the Toronto area. So somebody with some money, bring him up, because it ain't going to be me. Thank you for your time. I know we've just been able to ask you just a few questions, but that's really what this is. It's just a dipping our toe in the water of various faiths and getting to have someone like yourself, a prominent Hindu, to be able to ask some questions of. And I know you've been very gracious with your time, and we wish we could speak with you a lot longer, but I want to thank you for what you have given us,
just
Mr. Gandhi.
Just one more quick one. Please. Please. Mr. Gandhi, A.L. Basham called it, quote, the happiest and most civilized part of the world, southern India, in the 1900s. How do you respond?
Well, I would say every part of India or every part of the world, there are people who are happy and there are people who are not. And it's a very personal thing. I wouldn't say that all of India or all of southern India are
the happiest part of the world.
And what's this have to do with the Hindu faith, though?
If 70% of that country is Hindu and it's the happiest part of the world, I want to know Hinduism.
Maybe he,
right.
Good.
Maybe he found something there to be happy about.
All right. I'm holding you up and I'm holding Drew up, and I won't ask any more questions. Sorry.
Mr. Gandhi, if with your permission, we would love to have you on our show again in the future. It has been quite enjoyable and quite
an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, enlightening, that's for sure. Thank you so much, Arun Gandhi.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. His website is arungandhi.org, ARUNGANDHI. If you don't know how to spell Gandhi, you don't deserve to go there. Arungandhi.org. Now joining us on the phone at the end of that time is our tribal council member. We had four gentlemen come into our studio to, I guess, sort of vie for the position of soul survivor, and we just couldn't say goodbye to all of them. So Ryan became our soul survivor, but these gentlemen have agreed to be our tribal council, and Greg joins us on the phone. Greg, how you doing, man?
Very well, Drew. How are you today?
Very well. Sorry to rip you off of time here, but what are your thoughts on that interview with Gandhi's grandson?
Well, it certainly went better than last week's interview.
Yes, smart it did. Guy. Yep.
I just had to poke you with that one. I thought it was a great interview. I wish there were more time. I'd like to know, six other things at least. And just never enough time to cover what is a marvelous religion. I would have to say that if I weren't going with one of the Western monotheistic type of religions, Hinduism would be my choice for a number of reasons. So,
well, let me bring this up with the three of you. Ryan, monotheistic religion, believing that there's one God versus, a sort of a pantheistic type, some would say polytheistic type, many gods. Hinduism is pantheistic and humans share in the divine reality. So many gods versus one God. Is one of those harder to grasp?
No, one is BS, and just as many are BS too. Like, there's no exponential quota to it.
But do you find it easier to believe in a one God religion versus a many God religion?
No, what I find appealing about the Hindu religion is that they're willing to take exception to everyone else and all their faults and everything they do wrong. And despite the fact they're polytheistic, I really don't care. I mean, yes, it's a quotable quote that it's nice, Zeus on Olympia and all the gods live there together, and then going down to one god, then you're getting closer to the real number.
Right.
Like, it's all appealing. But the fact of the matter is, these guys are concerned with life and peace and love, and I can't find a bad word to say about a Hindu person. I'm sorry.
Well, we'll try to dig some of that up for next week. Greg, if you were to ask Gandhi's grandson one question, if you were the sole survivor, what would it be?
Well, I think I would have asked a different question with respect to reincarnation. Because when you talk about sort of the New Age movement here and people picking up parts of Hinduism, and this idea of you're on a wheel of life, you have almost an unlimited number of chances of sort of getting it right, and you're progressing through lifetime after lifetime with this sort of karmic bank account where you do good deeds and you go up, you do bad things and your bank account goes down. But what that ends up translating into is a very non-Christian kind of approach to helping people that are in trouble. Because in the strict Orthodox Hinduism, when there's a beggar on the street, yeah, you have to give alms to support a beggar, but you don't have to do anything to lift that man up, because he's doing one of two things. Either he's paying off a debt for having been a jerk in a previous lifetime, or he's gaining extra credit by suffering more intensely this time.
Right.
And so there's a static quality to the Hindu society. Yeah, you have to give rice and food to give alms to the poor, and they're generous that way. But there's no sense, because everyone looks and goes, he's already chosen to be here. He chose those circumstances, and he's going to get another 1,000 throws at this. So,
yeah.
Which is really different than the one-way trip of Christianity. The only person ever coming back reincarnated is Jesus. Everyone
right.
else. Only
oh, right, right, way. Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Right. Yep. Ryan's shaking his head. Is that because if you don't have much in your stomach, or what's going on?
Well, a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well, you got something
no,
in your stomach.
No, it just seems like a terrible cop-out, and the poor, everyone deserves to be equal. Like, if you're successful, you pay a little more tax, you help the poor, and that drains down. That is the entire opposite of Reaganomics, okay?
Right.
You don't want that. And listening to that spiel, it made me a little...
Nauseous?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Greg, I want to thank you for just tuning in for that. I knew that this would be one that you would thoroughly enjoy listening to, so I wanted to...
Absolutely.
Yeah. And thank you for just chiming in with your two cents at the end of this and being part of our tribal council, man. Appreciate it, dude.
I love it so much, and I'll keep listening. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Greg. Okay, bye-bye. Hey, thanks for tuning in, folks, and may the God who sees you find you. No, I got to get this right.
No, I think you had it right.
May you find the God who sees you. There, I said it.
There
I'm
going to
say it again so it stays in my brain. May you find the God that sees you. See, that was my tribute to Gandhi. Come on.
Well, thank God you're not the jury. Well, thank God I'm not the judge.